Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Jimmy Carboni. I'm Jimmy's number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. And we've got a special show for you tonight. It's April 16th, 2013. It's Shiner Beer from Texas, hot sauce and pretzels. I got Eric Weber from, he's the PR guy for Shiner, which has just come to New York City. And it's kind of a big deal for people from Texas. And Lena from Zygmunt's Pretzels,
who's going. Hey.
All right, so we got some pretzels, we got some hot sauces, and we got Shiner. So Shiner, that's a big story. A lot of friends who went to UT in Texas, they always ask them, can they get Shiner?
There are thousands of former Texans here in the New York area, and then untold numbers more people who've been through Texas who've had a chance to sample Shiner, and so it was inevitable that we'd get here. It took us 104 years, but we're finally here as of this week.
All right. Well, that's cool. And Lena, you're from Zygmunt's Pretzels. You've been to a lot of beer events with us, and you've got a new pretzel that you wanted us to try.
Yeah, wrote a sourdough. We just started working with this very temperamental as all sourdoughs because you don't use real yeast.
All right.
So you sit around and you hope that whatever yeast spores are in the air will end up in your dough and they will rise. So, yeah, they are a little bit more acidic and like softer crumb and probably... a good backdrop for anything with strong flavors.
All right. And we're going to have a couple call-ins later in the show, too. So here we go. Give a little cheers to the people in Boston. You know, that was a little unexpected tragedy yesterday.
And Prosit.
You know, life goes on, but sorry. It's pretty tragic. But we're here with Shiner. So you guys are pretty awesome. You started out your Bavarian influence brewery, 1909 in Texas.
Right. The town of Shiner, its population 2,069 in central Texas, and it was settled by German and Czech immigrants, and they were farmers for the most part. And not long after they settled, they began to brew their own beer because they couldn't find beer that they remembered from their home countries. And so they started the Shiner Brewing Association, which was an amateur operation for the first few years, and then they got good enough that they called in a professional, and they found a guy, Cosmos Spetzel, who was Bavarian raised and trained as a brewmaster, and he found his way to Shiner by way of South Africa and Cairo and Canada, and somehow they found him and convinced him to come to really the middle of nowhere in Texas to be their brewmaster. And he eventually bought the brewery, gave it his name, so it's the Spetzel Brewery in Shiner, Texas, and then Shiner Beers are the name of the beers. But so we've been brewing beers mostly with German and Czech influence for 104 years now.
Well, we've got a bunch of merchandise for you guys. It seems like you've got pretty awesome T-shirts and hats. If we're going to tweet on at @beer_sessions, whoever retweets it first is going to win a free T-shirt from Shiner. It's quite an amazing thing that you guys have got this image in Texas, and people are really loyal to you. And in the days of these new craft breweries, it's always about what's new and you know, what's culty. But how do you guys – what do you attribute your success to and your popularity to?
I think part of it is that there is an authenticity to the brand. I mean, it is we're brewing over 500,000 barrels a year now, but every drop of it is still brewed right there in Shiner, Texas, by 120 brewery workers. The brewmaster, Jimmy Morick, has worked at the brewery since he was 16 years old. He walks to work. There's a small townishness. The brewery is very much a part of the town and vice versa. And I think that's an important thing, is an authenticity thing. And then the beer really caught on in Austin in the 70s. The brewery is about to go under. In fact, one of many times it was about to go under. And it caught on in Austin. There's a real eclectic mix of people in Austin, rednecks, hippies, college students, musicians, and I think they embrace the authenticity and that sort of small-town nature, and so it's really taken off from there. So Austin is really our spiritual home, even though Shiner's 90 miles away. And so from there, it grew out from there as a devoted following to a kind of a Texas icon, even though I don't like to think of us so much as a Texas beer as it's a small town brewery. I think the brewery would be the same success story if it were in Iowa or Ohio or somewhere else, but we happen to be in Texas, and we have legions of people who grew up in Texas and left and who have asked for the beer, and we followed them.
So what was the beer scene like in Texas like in the 70s?
Lone Star and Lone Star.
I knew that there was a Belgian guy, Pierre Sellis.
He came along a little bit later.
He went to Texas.
Yeah, late 70s, and he came along, and he was a real pioneer in the craft business. Long before that term was used at least very commonly, he was there. And again, that was an extremely popular beer in Austin, and I think there are a number of now craft breweries in and around Austin, and I think he really is – ought to be credited, if not credited, as the pioneer of Texas craft brewing, if not broader than that. But then he sold the brand to Miller, and it got shelved, unfortunately, and then they never really did anything with it. And so it sort of disappeared. It's made a kind of minor revival lately, but he was definitely a pioneer and was an influence. You know, hardly anybody was drinking Belgian beers, certainly in Texas back then. But he was quite popular then.
Yeah, I remember when I first started drinking beer that Sellis White Ale was one of the few Americans that people were really proud of back then.
Yeah, and it was it's a shame that he's probably not still around doing that. But I don't know what's happened to the brand. I think it's been bought and sold a time or two, but not produced.
Well, let's try some beers. What did you bring with us? I've never had a Shiner. I've only been to Texas once. I drove through Amarillo a long time ago.
Yeah, Amarillo. That's
and my buddy.
A long way.
My
from
buddy's
Austin
the editor at Thrillist. His name's David Blend.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's
always
you know him. He's always asking for Shiner, and he's a big UT guy. So,
the flagship beer at Shiner is Shiner Bock, and it makes up probably about 75% of our production. The interesting thing I think about Shiner Bock is it's not really a true Bock beer. Real beer connoisseurs sometimes push back a little bit on it, saying it's not a true Bock, and it's not really. It was called Bock since 1913, and they called it that mostly because they brewed it seasonally in the spring, about the time Bock did, and it was a dark beer, and that's not the one I opened, but we're going to try it something different. And the reason that became our flagship was that it's dark and a little more full-bodied without being too heavy. It's a very sessionable beer, and so people liked it because it was somewhat exotic before people were getting too experimental with beer, but it was a departure from the Shiner Premium or the Lone Stars or anything else. The one you're sampling right now is Shiner Cosmos. It's pretty rare. It's only available in what we call our family reunion, our variety pack, and so it's really highly sought after. But we don't brew it regularly. It's a little bit hard to find, and we like it that way. But it's an all malt beer that is an old recipe from Cosmos, and so it's named in his honor.
So like an amber kind of Vienna lager kind of taste.
Yeah, much like that. Yeah.
Do you guys talk a lot about old German styles? When you talk about the brewery,
we do. Now we've departed recently and started making our first ales. In fact, I brought a little bit of sample pale ale, but that was the first in 100 years that wasn't truly German or Czech influence. So we like to think of it as a sort of fusion, which is the fashionable food word now. But so we make some. We make a Czech Pilsner, for instance, that I think is very authentic to the style, and in fact, the Czech, the 101, the Czech Pilsner won some awards at the European Beer Star Award, competing against Czech breweries, and so I think it's very authentic to the style. Even when we get a little more exotic, we have a holiday beer called Holiday Cheer, which is a dunkel. And it's flavored with Texas peaches and pecans, so it's got some German roots and a little bit of Texas flair as well. And the Bock the same way. There's some German roots to it. It's not a true Bock. It's really it's a great example of an American dark lager. And when it wins awards, which it does, it wins in that category. But it does have there's a little bit of, you can hear a little German spoken in almost every beer that we make, or a little Czech.
Let's try the Shiner Bock. This is my first time having Shiner ever. Ever.
You know, there's not one in this box. I think it's still over in the...
We'll have it after. What's the next one? The Wild Honey, what's that?
That's a Wild Hare, and it's an American Pale Ale. The first, we expanded the brewery 2 years ago to create an ale house, and so this is the first ale that we produced.
Well, you know what I'm
Everything
chewing on?
Has been lager.
I'm chewing on Zygmunt's pretzels.
They're really good.
These sourdough are good, Lena.
Thank you.
They're like bread. It's...
Yeah, I'm hoping we're going to move more into bread with this.
I think
this
it's my favorite pretzel you ever made.
My favorite is just plain. Because we also do a lot of flavored ones, and I brought some truffle cheddar. And
you're really tough. You know, she's a tough cookie. I mean, you're so successful because you're really demanding, and you don't like things that aren't up to your standards, do you?
Well, we try. We are, you know, a specialty, so we have to, I guess, do the best we can. All we make is pretzels. So it's, it has to be... strong every time. Yeah.
And you were also influenced by like Austrian German. Well, because like America, it was street. You get street pretzels that are kind of dried out. They don't really have much flavor.
I had one yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Perfect. Yeah. You described it well.
Well, I think they were all perfect at the beginning. They were all homemade. And the only way to make them is the German way, which is dipping them in lye and sodium hydroxide. And that really what makes them German. That's the crust, that's the color, the flavor of the pretzel. And then as it left the homes and went into mass production, I think they switched to just boiling in baking soda, which is safer, I guess, overall, and faster and cheaper and so on. So it's disappeared. Yeah.
Well, a lot of our listeners do. I got pretzel in my mouth. I'm not stopped eating. A lot of our listeners are homebrewers, so... You know, when you make a pretzel, what is the step about dipping in lye, and how dangerous is it?
It's really not dangerous if you handle the solution properly, which means that don't rub your eyes with your hands while they're still wet. Neutralize with acid, any vinegar solution will be fine. Gloves, that's not much scarier than any cleaning chemicals. Yeah, but what lye does, it just cooks the surface and gives this sheen and very characteristic flavor. And then whatever poisonous in the lye, it just all disappears in the heat. So it's completely neutralized by the heat. Yeah, but I think a lot of it was also...
So whatever doesn't kill you is good for you, right?
Yeah, well, my kids grew up eating it. It's totally safe.
I'm sure I'd use that word poisonous, but.
And what did you just pour for me, Eric? This is a ginger beer.
That is our summer seasonal, which is called Ruby Redbird. The ruby name comes from ruby red grapefruit, which is born raised in the Texas Rio Grande Valley, and then it's got a hint of ginger there also. Redbird. It's called Redbird. Almost everybody who works at the brewery has a nickname. Redbird is a woman who's worked at the brewery for many years, and this beer was named in her honor. But it's another example of how we have sort of the mainstay line of Shiner Bock and Shiner Premium, which is a golden lager. It's the original recipe. And then the brewery, I think, has been very good about trying to stretch and experiment a little bit. And so the Ruby Redbird is a fruit-infused beer. That's not, you know, they're not doing that a lot in Cosmo Spetzel's day, but... it turned out to be our most popular seasonal. It's very, very, very popular during the summer. We do the Holiday Cheer, which has Fredericksburg peaches and pecans in it. Jimmy Morick, the brewmaster, actually roasts the pecans himself out in front of the brewery. And so it's all really, like I said, kind of a small-town operation still, everything we do. But, yeah, we're trying to stretch. So we've created the Pale Ale, a farmhouse ale, which is FM 966, which commemorates the road that goes in front of the brewery. And so there's that, not, I don't know if experimental is the right word, but we are trying to stretch and expand and have a craftier side to us as well as the mainstay beers.
Well, we're going to do an event this weekend, New York City Hot Sauce Expo, and we just got on the phone. We're going to have some Shiner there. I'm not sure what, but we're going to have some Shiner in kegs. And Lena, right now we're going to take a short break. We're going to taste some pretzels and hot sauces. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
All right,
let's taste a couple hot sauces.
This is.
The- You're listening to Home of Emptiness by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Learn more about beer and where to find it on the Beer Cloud. Go to GreatBrewers.com. Thanks for that little piece, Joe. It was kind of like a Texas twang song in the background. I think we're going down south. We got Shiner here, Eric Weber. He's the PR guy from Shiner, just coming into New York. We get some pretzels here from Sigmund's Pretzels, and we're trying some hot sauces. The New York City Hot Sauce Expo is this weekend, and 2 weeks ago at Jimmy's Number 43, we judged over 100 hot sauces from around the world. And some of those that we tasted, we're tasting right now with pretzels and some margarita pizza from Roberta's. So there's some pretty hot stuff. I mean, I thought with a theme like Shiner and Texas, it would be good to have pretzels and hot sauce. We had such a variety of hot sauce, unbelievable. Many are from New York. Wow. Our good buddy, New York City Hot Sauce Company, John Bratton, he makes uses peppers from the Brooklyn Rooftop Gardens at Brooklyn Grange. There's Steve Seabury with High River Sauces, the Heartbreaking Dawn. There's a lot of really good ones from this area who are award-winning, but you'll see over 40 of them this weekend. And what do you guys think about the hot sauce? Do you think about hot sauce in Texas? I know you guys do a lot of barbecue. I know you're in New York at Hill Country Barbecue, and they're one of the reasons why you guys came to New York, right?
Hill Country had been asking for beer since they opened, asking maybe too mild a term. They put in draft lines when they opened the restaurant 6 years ago and never used them until this last week, until Friday when they tapped the first kegs of Shiner. They set them aside for Shiner, and then they started asking for it and asking for it, and I think that it was a maybe daily thing, at least weekly thing, where they would call somebody at the brewery and ask. And so finally they got it this weekend. So we have an affinity for barbecue. That's a sort of Texas thing. But think also the beers tend to – all beer, I think, goes well with barbecue, or just about all beer. And so I think that's a mix. And, yeah, hot sauce, typically we're thinking in terms of Texas of more of the salsa-style hot sauce. And people are as opinionated there as they are about their beer or their barbecue. But, yeah, we talk a lot about it, and, of course, Texans will tell you nobody eats hotter or whatever. But this one, the Tabanero, is really good.
What's the label on that?
Tabanero.
Tabanero.
Yeah.
Yeah, people send in hot sauce from all, even as far as Germany and Oregon.
I don't know, but I could eat that a lot. So, yeah.
It's good on the pizza here,
it's
too.
Perfect. Yeah.
Hey, we got a call-in guest talking about food and beer pairings. His name is Mark Strubrant. He's known as the Belgian Beer Cafe. He tours. He's a beer sommelier. He tours and does special events around the world with Belgian breweries like Leffe and Stella. Mark, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan. I'm very jealous hearing about pretzel and hot sauce and pizza and barbecue.
Well, with your expertise, you know, what kind of beers would go well with a barbecue and hot sauce? Is that something that Belgian beers
well,
get into?
As we said before, lots of beers go very well with barbecue and hot sauce. But surprisingly, I was thinking about some good Belgian fruit beers that would go very well with it.
You mean like lambics and things like that?
Lambics or white beer-based ones or even a Flemish brand cherry beer would be very good. Sort of counterbalance that heat with some sweetness and some tartness.
So tell us about your background, because you're kind of a very serious beer guy. You're a knowledge expert You're a master beer sommelier. How did you get started in the beer world?
All of us, by accident, sort of started my career in law school in Belgium. And to fund my studies, I started working in a specialist beer bar in Belgium. And after 1 year, I thought beer was more interesting than law, so I switched over and came to the good side. And then qualified as a sommelier, as a beer sommelier. So, and now I've got a fantastic job to travel around the world, as you were saying. And also I'm coming to New York, to the Belgian Beer Cafe Nomad, to train up everybody and introduce everybody on the great Belgian beers we're going to have on offer, and so, also do a lot of food pairing.
So that's going to be an establishment in the Nomad Hotel called the Belgian Beer Cafe?
It's going to be 5th Avenue and 26th. So the Belgian Beer Cafe, bringing you the Belgian hospitality, great Belgian food, and a great range of Belgian beers. We're going to have more than 50 Belgian beers, sort of ranging from the classics, the well-known brands, going from the classic Belgian Lager Stella Artois all the way down to the Lambic beers, the Saison beers, you name it, all Belgian beer styles will be represented there.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. I know there's some issues that come up for you, like you care about serving beer at proper temperature.
Oh, absolutely. And what we're going to do is, because we want to really bring Belgium to New York, so I'm really honored to come to one of the great beer capitals in the world. But we're going to do Belgian style. That means we're going to serve all the beers in the correct large way, with the correct pouring ritual. And also what we're going to do is, when you go to Belgium, every Belgian bottled beer is offered at three temperatures, which will be fridge, room temperature, which will be a stock back bar, but also will have the cellar temperature. So you can decide what temperature you want to
beer. It's not like you're determining that each beer has a perfect temperature. You're letting people choose.
Well, we will do recommendations, but we believe that it's also the whole thing with Belgian beers is that you drink them as you want them. And as you know, temperatures have an impact on the aroma and the flavor of the beer. So, but the tradition in Belgium is to let people have their choice. And people in Belgium are very particular about it. They will say, can I have my beer from the cellar? Can I have it at room temperature? So, and that's why we want to represent this, is really do the Belgian thing with the Belgian Beer Cafe.
I don't know if you agree with this, Mark, but it seems like we're hearing more about proper glassware now, which is something I think for a long time that Americans didn't really think about. Pint glasses in America were usually not a pint glass, but a bar glass, a mixing glass. But do you see that as... Yeah. Sort of a growing trend for American beer fans?
Oh, absolutely. I think more and more, and I think people more and more are getting sort of aware, and lots of breweries, craft breweries, and other breweries as well, sort of realizing that the proper glassware has a big impact on the aroma, the taste of the beer, and also affects the carbonation. But overall, it's all about that flavor experience, getting that proper and correct flavor experience. So a lot of people think there's a bit of a gimmick behind it, but there's a lot of work behind it. And it's an easy thing for all the listeners. They can try it out. Just pour any beer you want, put in a straight glass and put in a wine glass, and just smell the difference, and you'll see immediately the importance of using the correct glassware.
Well, Mark, how did you go from being a law student and working in a bar to being this Mr. Belgian beer cafe guy? Like, tell us a couple steps along the way where you learned or you grew, or some great experiences you had working in Belgium.
Well, I started working in a specialty beer bar, which is in a way what the Belgian Beer Cafe also is about. It's a place where you go to try different beers, and these are bars which will have 100, 200, up to 2,000 different beers. So I worked in various of these different bars, and then started working very closely with different brewers. And then started doing very different courses, and also then started studying. After which I then moved to London, England, to start working for a Belgian restaurant chain and helping to develop the concept. And more I saw there was a gap there to educate people, inform people, but in a way that, without being too technical, sort of provide more sort of... an education, really, for people. And then I had a great opportunity to start traveling around the world. So I now travel from China all the way to the States, north and south, going to various events to demonstrate how to beer, taste beer, how to pour beer, also do a lot of food pairing. There's great things you can do, and you guys were already talking about matching beer with food. So I think I've got one of the best shops in the world.
I think you did too, man. And we're struggling with the hot sauce. I just had Eric. What's that wide mouth one that we just had in front of you, Lena? This sauce?
Yeah, sauce, hot sauce.
Yeah.
I had a question. You mentioned China, and I was curious about that because, of course, like with every other commodity, China is an enormous, enormous market, and I know that they're large beer consumers, probably just by volume of people. But I don't know anything about the beer scene there. Is it at all a sophisticated beer market, or is it an emerging beer market?
It's a very emerging, but they're catching on very quickly, and they're really becoming very knowledgeable, and they really want to know everything about beer. So they're really entering this whole new world. So it's fascinating to see these differences between the different countries. And it's a big discovery for them, all these different types of beer. In a way, I see in the States as well, which is great to see all the craft beers. And makes me enormously proud to sort of see that a lot of craft beers around the world, and especially in the States, to sort of see that our Belgian beers have been the inspiration to different styles within the craft beer. So I think we've got interesting and fascinating times ahead.
Mark, I'm gonna put you on the spot before we close out this segment. Okay, tell us three of your favorite Belgian beer and food classic pairing combinations.
Obviously, Belgium is known for its beers and its chocolate, so I have to talk about Belgian chocolate. A great like a Leffe Dark or Westmalle Double Trappist beers combined with Belgian chocolate or Belgian chocolate desserts. It's just to die for. Fantastic combination. Another one as well is the wheat beer, the Belgian wheat beers, like the Hoegaarden. For those people who like hummus, try it out. It's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, wow, wheat beer and hummus. That's interesting.
Sorry?
Oh, that sounds interesting. Wheat beer and hummus, yeah. Yeah.
If you try, for instance, the East Flemish Old Browns, the Lieflemans, or even the Rodenbergs, if you try those things with goat cheese, do those similar flavors, the sort of the tangy tart flavors working together, those are fantastic as well. But I think my all-time favorite must be a Leffe Blonde and a Creme Brulee.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm getting hungry. Well, I'll tell you, thanks so much, Mark, for coming on there. And you can stay on listening. We can talk later, too. But we're eating, I guess. You eat hot sauce or you drink it? I don't know. Do you drink hot sauce? I just had a little bit of that sauce, and my mouth is still burning. The one thing I think some people say, you'd have to have milk afterwards. I don't think beer or milk really dulls the heat, but I think chocolate does. I think I could use some chocolate right now. Yeah.
Any fat will take care of it, right? That's why I think they recommend the
good hot sauce ought to be like a stalker where you don't really notice it at first, and by the time it hits you, it's too late.
We just tried the black lager.
That's good. Yeah. That sounds good.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks for calling in. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to This Body by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
you know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us and our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Yep, go out and become a member of the Heritage Radio Network. I'm a member. I think I'm member 501, which I think means I was the first member. Lena, are you a member of Heritage Radio Network?
Yes, I am.
You are, because you're good. And Eric, one day.
Not yet.
You
one
too.
Day soon, I think.
Maybe Shiner will become a company member.
If that's an option, I think we can talk about that.
Yeah, I think sure. Part of that involves giving T-shirts and providing beer at events.
And necklaces. I have a necklace.
All right. Yeah. We've made the first step.
There is a cool event coming up. I know that the Heritage Radio Network is doing an event April 27th. It's called Abruzzese a Barbecue with Mark Ladner, who's a great chef from places like Del Posto, and he used to be at Lupa. I can say it like Lupa, Del Posto. But that's going to be pretty cool. So I would check out the HeritageRadioNetwork.org site. And if you become a member, you can do all these great things. All right, so we're talking about hot sauce. New York City Hot Sauce Expo is this weekend. And we got Scheinerbach from Texas in New York. We got Lena Sigmund's Pretzels with a new pretzel. You do so many beer events. You came to the New York City Brewer's Choice. What other beer events are you at with your pretzels?
I think any event that's happening is calling us. In this or that capacity, either vendor or sponsor, and we love to go.
What are some of the events that you like?
I think what you guys do every fall, but this time it was in February, the City Winery.
Yeah, the New York City
Brewers
Choice.
I think it's the best by far.
Thank you. I think
mostly because you really get to meet all the brewers. It's not just distributors, sales reps sending
them. Well, that's one thing. We have this group called the Good Beer Seal, and there's 41 beer bars in New York, and there's more, and there's going to be more, and some in Long Island and New Jersey. But there's places you can go and really try all the best beers in the world. And, honestly, sometimes that's better than going to a beer fest because, I know up the street from me there's a bar called Proletariat, and he only has really cool, interesting small breweries.
Then you,
and,
right?
Go to Jamie's number 43, the blog post today. I just went through my inventory today, and I was like, oh, my God, I've got all these interesting, unusual breweries that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
And I've got, like, 5 Green Flash on draft tonight. It's just crazy. And New York has this great beer scene. And that's why it's great to welcome you guys, too, because everyone was waiting for Shiner.
We're so happy to be here. But this is it's a very exciting time just to be a beer fan in the U.S. I mean, pre-Prohibition, there were a lot more breweries than there are now. But there is more really good beer being made in the United States right now than ever before, and that just keeps growing. And so you're getting varieties that you never would have seen before. You're getting introduced to styles that before were so obscure that you could never find them, you'd only heard about them, and now they're being made down the street. And I think that's awesome. I mean, any town you go to, almost of any size, somebody's making beer, and probably someone's making really good beer. And I think that's very exciting. And so we're glad to be in New York because it's a really good beer town, for one thing. And that makes it tough for people like us because the competition's very stiff because there's good beer being made here, and people in this town know beer really well. But we're confident that we can stack up. I mean, Shiner has a place in the sort of beer pantheon that I think is kind of nice.
So you guys at Shiner, so you're considered a craft brewery?
We're the, according to the Brewers Association, we're the fourth largest craft brewer in the country. That actually includes Shiner is owned by one person, but he also owns Bridgeport Brewery in Portland, and he owns Trumer, which is in Berkeley, California, Trumer Pills. But yeah, it's considered a craft brewer. And we're very proud of that. We were canning our beer long before any craft brewer was doing that, and now that's quite a trend, and we like to think we were ahead of that. But one thing, a place that I think Shiner is very proud of, a beer like Scheinerbach, which is not a really extreme craft beer. It's not like some of the very extreme Belgian styles or IPA styles. But I think that one thing that Sam Adams, that Shiner, that New Belgium to a certain degree, and Sierra Nevada don't get enough credit for is moving people from mass market beer to the craft beer. And I think so in some cases Scheinerbach was an intermediate step for a lot of people who were afraid of dark beer. They tried it, they liked it. They either stay with it because they like it and they're lifelong fans, or maybe they decide they next want to try whatever, a Schwarz beer or whatever else they want to try. And so then they move on to other styles. And I think that's an important process in the whole sort of beer lovers evolution is moving into that. Nobody starts with an imperial stout, or you move into that, and some you got to move.
Well, now I'm going backwards. I'm going into really good session beers. Like this is almost like a Schwarz beer. What's the last beer you poured for us?
That is Shiner's Bohemian Black Lager, and it is it's our take on a Schwarz beer. It's of course it's dark roasted malts. It was one of our anniversary beers. We did a series of beers leading up to the centennial of the brewery, which was a little over 3 years ago. And it proved to be really popular. The anniversary beers were meant to be not seasonal, but short term. They were just going to be out for a little while and then gone. But a couple of them really caught on, and this was one of them. And it'll be available here in New York. It's become one of our best sellers. But yeah, dark coffee notes to it, and
it's delicious.
Yeah, it's thank you. It's my favorite. So.
Hey, talking about the craft beer scene, our next call-in guest, it's Jared Stutz. He's coming up. Trying to raise money for his documentary film, Brewers by the Bay. Jared, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here. How's it going?
So I checked that you've got a really great little video. You're on the Indiegogo platform. Let everyone know how they can learn more about your film. And you're raising money to make the film, right?
I am, definitely. Yeah, they can actually just go to brewersbythebay.com, and that will redirect them to the Indiegogo website.
Great. So why did you are you a filmmaker to begin with? Is that your background?
This is actually my first film, believe it or not. But yeah, hopefully I'll be continuing to make documentaries, and this is just my first one right now. So
I saw that your spokesperson, it's Brendan. He's the brewer from Thirsty Bear Brewery.
I'm here right here.
All right. How are you, Brendan?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
You did great, man. It's a great video. Maybe I'll put $50 in. I don't know if...
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think if you go to our website, goodbeerseal.com, we're going to post that video so people can check that out.
Cool.
You guys got to talk. So tell us about the video project, why you're doing it, and some of the top brewers in the San Francisco area that are going to be in your film.
Sure. So the project is really about the history of beer in San Francisco. Really, it's dating all the way back to 1847. It's pretty incredible that, you know, when you think about beer being made back then, I mean, a lot of people think about lagers and, you know, well, San Francisco actually claimed to have porters and ales, and they actually had a few different styles. And then shortly after, just a few different things happened. The earthquake happened. A lot of breweries were actually destroyed. And then after that, there's Prohibition. And then after Prohibition, a lot of breweries came back, and they're making lager beers. And Brendan, if you want to take over from there, I know you like to talk about the Bauhaus.
Well, the history of beer in San Francisco is pretty extensive. We're going to do our best job in putting it into an hour and a half format. But basically after Prohibition and World War II, I'm sure there was an industrialization of, well, beer across not only San Francisco, but also across the nation. And I think one of the key elements here for this specific documentary is the fact that a gentleman named Fritz Maytag reopened a place called Anchor Brewing Company and kept the steam beer alive, for example, which is sort of America's indigenous beer in a way. And that small production of a unique beverage or unique beer led to, at least in my mind, sort of the renaissance in beer in America, because they brewed the first porter for a long time, the first barley wine. Liberty Ale is widely considered to be the first IPA. So a lot of firsts came out of that brewery, and that's led to, this is like, the beginning of the 80s when we started having other breweries pop up in the area, at least in the Bay Area, which would be New Albion Brewing Company being the prime example. So, long story short, there's a lot to talk about here in terms of the history of beer in San Francisco, and so we're trying to capture as
good,
much
man.
As we can.
We're gonna get you guys again. Say how they can find you, the website again.
Sure, yeah, they can go to brewersbythebay.com.
We don't have all the time to talk to you guys, but I want to say, Brendan,
yeah.
Tell me five small breweries in the San Francisco area that you like.
In the San Francisco area, besides my own, we've got a lot of good ones here. I'm a big fan of, in terms of pubs, we've got great ones like Magnolia, which is makes English-style ales, and 21A is around the corner from us here. On the larger scale, which is the production side, obviously we have Anchor, but we also have Speakeasy, which makes a lot of great ales and lagers. Big fan of Lagunitas, How many more do you need? I could go on and on, unfortunately. But
tell us the name of your brewery again. What's the name of your brewery?
I work at Thirsty Bear Brewing Company in downtown San Francisco.
How many people are making beer in the Bay Area now, commercially?
Oh, I got to tie that up. 30, maybe?
Wow, that's awesome.
I'll throw that out there. I mean, we've got, working our way down the peninsula, there's a lot of breweries popping up down there, all the way down to San Jose, which is the enlargement of Gordon Biersch, and then you go hop around the corner, it goes to Buffalo Bills, which is one of the original breweries here in America. And there's at least 10 in the making right now. I know
awesome.
Faction's going to come in on. Cellar Maker is going to come on down in San Francisco, down the street.
You can
and there's the bigger ones like Pyramid, Trumer Pilsner. It goes on. I haven't actually counted them all, to be honest with you. But
Brennan, that's sweet. Hold on a second.
Specifically focusing on the city and county of San Francisco.
Awesome. Hold on one second.
We're talking about Marin County, the East Bay, or the South Bay, for example.
Great. Guys, hold on for one second. So thanks for coming on. We're going to steer people to you guys. We had a guy last month. He was in Long Island. He was trying to raise money to get a hop harvester for his hop farm. I think he raised like $30,000. And we'll make sure that people check you out. Check out Brewers by the Bay. They're doing Indiegogo. They're trying to raise $10,000 to get their film made about San Francisco breweries. Thanks for coming on, guys. We're going to keep talking, but this sounds not so good, okay? Thank you.
So,
Eric, he mentioned the other brewery that you guys own. What is it?
Trumer.
Trumer.
Trumer. And there's a Trumer brewery in Austria, which has been brewing for about 400 years. And I think there was some talk about maybe importing that. And the people at the brewery there said, no, wouldn't be the same. And so Carlos Alvarez, who owns Shiner and owns Bridgeport, found a place where the water and they pretty much recreated the brewery from Salzburg in Berkeley. And so what they feel is they believe that they're brewing exactly the same Trumer pills that you would get in Austria, but they're brewing it in Berkeley. And it's it doesn't have wide distribution yet, extremely popular in California, moving into Texas and some other states. Don't know exactly the distribution there, but it's a great classic. Sort of German.
So, how long has Carlos been the owner of Shiner and Trumer?
He bought Shiner in 1989. Prior to that, his experience in the beer business. He's originally from Mexico and worked for Modelo, and he was the original distributor for Corona in the United States. And eventually, Corona they swung a deal with one of the big houses, and so that left him. Without his flagship, but with the resources to do other things. And he likes the sort of small aspect of brewing, and so he bought the Shiner Brewery, which was struggling at the time. And so he saved the brewery, which thankfully he did, and then he eventually bought Bridgeport. And Trumer is much newer. Trumer is only, I think, 4 or 5 years old.
Wow. Well, that's a good backstory. It's nice to have you on. You know, like I said, so many people from Texas have talked about Shiner. It's my first time trying it, and it's exciting to try it on the air. And we're going to see you this weekend at New York City Hot Sauce Expo, which is kind of cool.
It is. I'm not the most excitable person, but it's hard to underscore how excited Texans are. We had a few, the president of the local Texas X's Club, which is the University of Texas Alumni Club in New York, who showed up at our distributor meeting the other night because they're just chomping at the bit, really, to have Shiner here. And we're going to be a sponsor of their big chili cook-off. And, on social media, we have just been inundated for the last few years with requests from Texans in New York. So it's a baked-in audience, but, of course, we're looking for a much broader audience than that. We're hoping that those people will share it with their friends and that your listeners and that other people will get out and give us a try and judge for themselves, and I think they'll like what they taste.
All right. And, Alina, anything else you want to say? I really like your this is the experimental sourdough pretzel.
It's a keeper.
Thanks for letting us try it on air, too.
And I really like the Red Bird Ruby and the Black Lager.
Yes, thank you.
Excellent.
And you should drink four a day. That's just for the health benefits.
Well, let's make a toast to Shiner, the black pills, and Lena's pretzels from Signal
Pretzels. Prosit.
All right.
Welcome to New York.
Thank you.
And we'll give a little shout out here. Again, thanks to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. All right, and we're going to give a shout-out to Savor, which is the big Brewers Association event. This year, it's coming to New York City on June 14th and June 15th. It's the premier beer and food pairing event in the nation. And beginning Tuesday, April 16th, which is this week, a limited supply of Savor presale tickets will be available to American Home Brewers Association and Brewers Association members. So go check out SavorCraftBeer.com. And, you know, I was just in D.C. for the Craft Brewers Conference. So they really have it going on. You know, they've got some of the best brewers in America. And that weekend, actually, we're going to do with a bunch of Long Island breweries. We're going to do some things in the city at Jimmy's Number 43 and some good Brazil bars. So that's a good weekend to come to New York. If you're not here, you can come check out Shiner. We'll have it. So, again, thanks to our sponsors, greatbrewers.com, and you can find us on Facebook page and, again, our Twitter, @beer_sessions. Whoever retweets our tweet sometimes tonight is going to get a free Shiner T-shirt from us. All right. Thanks to Eric, Rich, Lena, Mark, and Jared for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.